Okay, guys, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Articles Show. I've got Dead Penetration here.
What's up?
We started a little late, so I actually had to do some Fetish Locator early, and I guess I'll be jumping back into that later. There was actually a choice, a pretty big choice that I was just left at, so it happened just in time. But all right, guys, this is our start of the holiday arc for our channel. You know, we had the Subverse arc, you know, where we talked about all the Subverse stuff. And as I have announced, I am going to release Subverse in massive chunks over the next week. That means you guys are probably going to get the entire story mode by the end of the week. Because I'm trying to rush through it as fast as I can. I'm in Act 3, and I'm trying to go through all the story shit, which means I won't be going to many of the side games. And the side quests, and the reason for that is because the enemies level with you. So it's really stupid to fucking level real high and then have to fight a much harder version of the final battle than I would have if I just went in there and did it right off. Because if they get stronger while I get stronger, then that's just going to make it tougher on me.
Yeah.
So I figure it'd just be easier to go through all that and then do the other shit.
But if you're both weak, ain't it going to be about even?
Nah, not really. I mean, I've already done the Sova arc. And Sova's fucking great. Oh my god, she's hilarious. One of the best characters. Her voice actress does make that character so great. But,
I saw a meme saying this is sad. They had Suicide Squad for like $4.99.
No, yeah. It's really super cheap.
I guess on the PlayStation.
So, but basically, guys, yeah, all that stuff is coming. I think I've got the last one. I think there's maybe like a few more girls you can get. I know you can get Blythe, and I know you can get Huntress, I believe. So I'm going to try to see if I can get those ones, but I am trying to finish the fucking game. And yes, I know there's devotion quests. I'm not going to be putting the devotion quests up because I literally don't have time. Like, it's already December, and I promised to I told myself I'd finish the game by December. So I'm a little bit over, and I've got other games to play, and they're not all not safe for work games. Like, I'm literally in the middle of Ys Nordics, and I'm literally in the middle of Ys IX, which is the one before Nordics. Not in the timeline style, but just in the numbered style. So I'd really like to get through those games, and then fucking finish Cyberpunk, because I really want
to
go through it.
I need to start.
Now, I just found out that you can't fucking date Judy if you don't play as Fem Shep. And I'm like, not Fem Shep, Fem V. I keep saying Fem Shep, which is from Mass Effect. But Fem V, because they've basically got females that you can date, and they've got males that you can date. And I didn't even know they had that. But basically, I can only get really Judy as a woman character, and of course, Panam is if you're a male character. But there's a few more you can get as a male character. And of course, there's the Joy Toys, which are the hoes, the hookers in the game. So I might be playing it again. And the really crazy thing about Cyberpunk, like if you watch the latest Ultimate Editions, because they're making an Ultimate Edition version of the game on physical CD, they're promoting the female character, female V, instead of the male V. Like, they're saying that the game is made now for the female V. Now, the female V does have a really good voice actress. So, it's not like... Yeah, so if you, like, want to play as a woman, they're basically saying you can. And me, I'd rather see the woman-on-woman action, because they literally do have that. Like, I'm into that.
Yeah.
So, I might go ahead and check that out, because obviously you get to date Judy, and Judy's my favorite in the game. Okay, so, pushing all that aside, I have a sponsor announcement. So, Revy got in touch with me, and they are selling the spinning robot pussy again. Even though he said that there's been no sales from this channel, I mean, I can't do anything about that, but the least I can do is promote. So, basically, if you guys are interested in a spinning robot pussy for your dolls or any other thing, because I know guys have used them, maybe you just want to turn it on while you're playing a great AVN or watching a hentai, or there's many other games, you can pick one up from spinningrobotpussy.com. There's also the Waifu Goo. It's still available. And I believe the Follow Me Eyes. I'm not sure. Basically, a lot of the things that were available are still available. So if you guys want to pick those things up, they're available at SpinningRobotPussy.com still. He's still producing them, and I think they'll be in production until about, well, until they run out.
Let's see. Because, you know, they... Follow Me Eyes for artwork.
Yeah, those
I've
are...
I've had some ideas about that.
Those are pretty cool. Those are pretty cool. I've got some. I've actually got some. If you, like, want them, I've got the eyes. I'll have to hunt them down, but I've got them.
Right.
They were kind of cool to me. Like, they do follow you. It's weird. But, yeah, anyway, I'll have to hunt them down. But, yeah, you can check those all out at SpinningRobotPussy.com. And I'll also advertise them with the Empress tomorrow, because we'll be doing the Empress Hour again. And she's got some things she wants to talk about, as always. So we're going to give her the floor on that. Okay, now, me shutting the fuck up. Well, not so shutting the fuck up. But basically, that's all we have to say when it comes to announcements. So I'm shutting the fuck up about announcements. I'm a little wired today. I've had a good day.
What?
So, feeling the post-Suicide Squad annue, whatever the fuck, Warner Brothers announces it won't be trying to launch 10, 12, 15, 20 different games anymore. Much more manageable. Suicide Squad didn't exactly fly off the shelf for old Warner Brothers, despite clearly having put a lot of effort into it. The live service flop suffered from meandering development. It lost them $200 million and wound up with the same player base as Gotham Knights somehow. It currently has a 24-hour peak of 181 Steam players at this time of writing and hasn't broken over 1,000 concurrents on the platform in 6 months. Okay, now, guys, to be absolutely fair with you, if you guys go to SteamDB, look up most games. I'm not talking about the popular. We're not talking Wukong. We're not talking Helldivers. We're not talking Stalker. We're not talking the big stuff that people are playing. We're talking any game, especially the arcade classics and arcade hits.
Yeah.
Those usually get real high in the beginning, but they go down. They go down to nothing. Like, they go down to barely anybody playing.
Yeah.
And these are big games. You think that people would be all about this when they're online and playing against each other.
Yeah.
They're not. There's barely anybody playing any of these games. So, even a game like, you know, I mean, this game wasn't great, but most games don't do well after a number of months or a number of years.
Oh, yeah.
They just don't.
Well, it's how they went about it, too. And the Gotham Knights was a disappointment to me, just controller-wise, how you control the characters. It's not like a beat-em-up, or it ain't... I was thinking... I was thinking it was going to be more like how you operate, like any of the Batman Arkham series, but it is not. You gotta do all these fancy combinations to do certain things that should be commonplace for the different characters.
It was like a deck builder, like you had different cards or something.
Oh, no, it's nothing like
it's
that.
It's not cards.
Now that, what is it? The Sons of whatever.
Oh,
yeah. That's
was
a card game. Okay. I was not expecting that.
Right.
When I got it.
Right.
But I thought I might play through it, but it seemed kind of not my thing.
Right, absolutely. So, that's not to mention Multiverses, which came out of its post-beta hiatus and has been not doing so great, losing an extra $100 million for the company. Oof, $300 million into fumbled project tears. Warner Brothers has looked very hard into a mirror, done some deep introspection, and thought, yeah, maybe we should focus up a bit here. During a recent financial call, Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav reveals plans to zero in on four IPs. Those being DC, in particular Batman, Hogwarts Legacy, Mortal Kombat, and Game of Thrones. We're through some of the worst, and it hasn't been pretty on the gaming business, but we have four games that are really powerful, he says. We're going to go away from launching 10, 12, 15, 20 different games. I think we have a real chance now with focus to have the gaming business be steadier. Now, granted, one should point out that both Suicide Squad and Multiverses both heavily feature DC characters, but I suppose they hinted at Return to Batman. means a shift away from trying to do an extended universe with the Thing. Now you might be thinking, hey Harvey, didn't Batman get shot in the head? Weren't people mad about it? To which I'll remind you that this is comic book world building.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League has been unkilling the Justice League for a hot minute. Of course, there need to be someone to replace the late Kevin Conroy, a genuinely gargantuan task, considering how iconic his voice has been to the role. Mind, Roger Craig Smith didn't do a terrible job in Batman Arkham Origins, so I'm sure he'll be there to pick up the mantle of the Dark Knight when he's not voicing Sonic the Hedgehog. Wow. Jeez, that's some impressive range. Otherwise, it'll be a balanced diet of those four IPs from now on. We are focusing our development efforts on those core franchises with proven studios to improve our success ratio, he adds. Which, I mean, yay, though I have to point out that Rocksteady was absolutely a proven studio with a strong pedigree, and that didn't stop Suicide Squad from happening. Here's hoping history won't repeat itself. So yeah, they're gonna do something different, and their focus is on Batman. Why? Batman sells.
It does sell. I think they could really do a good Superman one, but...
They could!
It'd have to be different than how they've done it in the past.
Yeah?
Can't be just flying through hoops.
Okay, they haven't... To be absolutely fair with you, they haven't done that in a long fucking time.
I ain't done anything with them in a long fucking time.
There's been some PS2 games.
Now they did have their Mortal Kombat version of an Injustice. 1 and 2.
Okay, so...
I like both of those.
These North Korean soldiers got hooked on porn after getting internet access for the first time while helping Russia fight Ukraine. North Korean military men who joined the war front in Ukraine on behalf of Russia have unfettered access, internet access for the first time, and may be using it to watch tons of porn, according to a report that a Pentagon official was unable to confirm. Now, I have a theory here. If you've been locked out from something for so many years, it's the curiosity.
It's well, you think of the dopamine rush you got the first time you saw porn versus what you years down the road got from seeing porn. It's way different.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or the first time you got off versus the last time you got off.
Right.
Warriors the dopamine's like... crack. It was great the first time, but people keep chasing that rut, and that's good.
Warriors from first the time. Hermit. Yeah, yeah. I again, though, everybody's got their vices. It's just not being in your vice 24/7 that people need to work with.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I drank alcohol today, but I didn't drink alcohol yesterday, day before that, and that day, and that day, and that day. There's a whole... I went whole fucking week.
Well, I'm getting ready for transplant. Plant, I can't drink it all.
Yeah, I know.
But when I do, it's gonna be so...
No, you need to hurry. You need to be careful with that too.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Warriors from the Hermit.
Like I used to.
Warriors from the Hermit Kingdom engaged in a battle in Ukraine for the first time Monday, but they purposely started fighting different demons before stepping foot onto any field, according to a report. Those soldiers have been engaged in a battle of the bulge since gaining free use of the internet, according to a correspondent from the Financial Times.
Of course, North
I think
Korea
I said students instead of soldiers,
mobiles.
But whatever. Anyway, a usually reliable source tells me that North Korean soldiers who have deployed to Russia have never had unfettered access to the internet before. As a result, they're gorging on pornography, wrote Financial Times foreign affairs commentator, Gideon Rockman in an ex-post. Rockman provided no more context on how his source would know the internet habits of the 10,000 North Korean soldiers sent by Kim Jong-un to bolster Putin's war effort. As entertaining as that sounds, I can't confirm any North Korean internet habits of virtual extracurriculars in Russia, the Defense Department spokesperson, Army Lieutenant Colonel Charlie Dietz, told Outlet Task and Purpose. We're focused on the more serious aspects of North Korea's involvement, if any, in Russia's military operations. As for internet access, that's a question best directed to Moscow. Right now, our attention remains on supporting Ukraine and addressing the more significant regional security concerns. The military publication reports that second and third order effects of exposing psychologically and culturally sheltered North Korean troops to the world of graphic internet pornography are not yet known. The Kremlin did not respond to the post request for comment. So, this could be legitimately bullshit because they're just There's one report, but the lieutenant colonel is saying it hasn't even been confirmed. Yeah. So they can't confirm the internet habits of 10,000.
They might be trying to save them from... you know what happens when they watch anything that they ain't supposed to in North Korea?
Well, that's true. That's true, too.
No, we won't out the soldiers that came to help us fight.
Because it says the U.S. can't confirm that North Korean soldiers in Russia hooked on porn. It can't confirm that. So, it's been changed. See how it says it here, but it says something completely different? This is the same article. Yeah. Interesting, huh? Whoops. Well, sorry about that. That is a good place for Let's Plays. If you want to, this is a good channel. I'm going to advertise it. So, if there's a lot of games, you're like, you know what? I just don't have the fucking time to go through them. Here you go. NARC for Nintendo, Cabal, a lot of classic NES, but then you got Sega CD, Game Boy. This dude's even got, like, full-on Star Trek Resurgence for PC, Sega CD, a lot of classic Neo Geo CD. There's some PlayStation. There's some brand new games on there. But definitely check it out. He constantly puts stuff up. There's constantly new games going up. And he's got 3,000 videos. No cheap playthroughs. This guy's really freaking good. Oh, it says, wow, look at that. 192 million viewers. Oh. Yep, he's been doing it since 2013. Definitely something you need to check out, guys. So, all right. That's not what I wanted. Okay, Arizona researchers. We'll just do this. Arizona researchers discover oldest U.S. gun dating back almost 500 years. Researchers in Arizona said they have unearthed the oldest gun ever found in the continental United States. The bronze cannon, or the wall gun, is associated with the first European expedition of the Southwest and was found on the floor of a Spanish stone and adobe building in southern Arizona near the Santa Cruz River in 2020, according to a new study published in the International Journal of Historical Archaeology. Using cutting-edge carbon dating technology, authors of the study say the weapon for 480 years sat in ruin inside the building that was part of San Geronimo III, the first European settlement in the Southwest that was established in 1540. Excavations began in late 2021 with the goal of understanding the context of the gun and exposing additional evidence of the Spanish settlement, wrote the study's authors Denny J. Seymour and William P. Maples. The design of the gun is consistent with the mid to late 1400s and was practically obsolete by the time of the expedition, according to Seymour and Maples. It appears that the gun was never fired and was deserted when the indigenous, whatever the hell the name of those people are, launched a successful attack against San Geronimo III, which researchers say led the Spanish to stay out of southern Arizona for 150 years. The gun is an important artifact and is no doubt the earliest known surviving firearm in the United States, and one of, if not the earliest, found in a reliable context in the New World, the researchers wrote.
Which they immediately used for a drive-by.
Well, it wasn't that kind of gun. It's like a cannon.
It reminds me of that meme where they're like, if mass shootings were like 1776 and the dude walks in the office with a musket, shoots the guy and starts reloading.
This is a bronze cannon. This
is
really
like a hand cannon, probably.
This is really fucking neat.
Well, it looked like it had wooden components, if it's what I'm thinking of.
They had arrowheads, lead bullets. That's pretty fucking cool.
Pretty cool.
The wall gun designed to be mounted on a wooden tripod. A wooden tripod.
So it's stationary, kinda.
Along fortification walls, a design that took hold in the 1400s. It was versatile, highly portable, and useful for offense as well as defense, researchers said. It was 40 pounds. It was perfect for the expedition because it was lightweight. And its durable nature and ease of use, according to the authors of the study, adding a pair of these could have been strapped onto a horse or mule. with one or more on each side of the balance during transport. The weapon is about 42 inches long, and it could handle heavy charges of buckshot around lead balls. When shooting a single lead projectile, gunpowder would have been poured into the muzzle, followed by the round ball and a wad of paper or grass to keep the ball from rolling out when the muzzle was lowered, researchers said.
Some rifles, shotguns, about that long.
It had no sights, leading experts to theorize it fired like buckshot, like those used in shotguns. However, it appears it was never fired. There was no black residue in the barrel, often a cause of corrosion. The reason it was not loaded or fired, researchers posit, is because the Spanish didn't have time. The whatever the hell the name of those people were mounted their attack early in the morning, and the Spanish were taken by surprise, as many were killed in their beds. The gunners were either killed, captured, or fled, according to Seymour and Maples. They noted that the gun was too expensive to be left behind under normal circumstances. Now, some 480 years later, this historic weapon was excavated along with a second cannon that will soon be examined. This is a unique sight, which likely explains why one cannon was left here along with a second one recently discovered since this writing, which will be analyzed in a future article the researchers wrote. So that is pretty fucking cool.
Oh, yeah. That is pretty neat.
Pretty fucking cool. Not everything we talk about is purely politics. Publishers have finally said the quiet part out loud about retro games. Now this fucking sucks. In a recent move against the archiving of video game history, publishers have finally come clean on why they dislike retro games so much. The recent legal case regarding the archiving of video games, which was helpfully collated at Games Radar, is finally over. Unfortunately, the final ruling is firmly against making gaming history available to all. This is an obviously awful and sad move culturally, but it will also affect people who will want to make games in the future. After all, imagine not being able to go to a library and read the works of Charles Dickens, E.M. Foster, or any other historical author. Without ready access to the history of literature, what could anyone hope for its future? Likewise with games, we all need access to the formative titles that have shaped the medium. They are akin to being the required reading before you even step into the world of actually making games. However, the motivation behind this protectionism is profoundly disappointing. Again, it comes from the festering den of iniquity, games publishing. With all the layoffs across the games industry to compensate for a rampant budgetary overspending in publishing, the reality behind keeping retro games within a paid walled garden is about charging new money for old rope and controlling the market to force gamers to play new games. The specific quote is that there would be significant risks that preserved video games would be used for recreational purposes.
Really? Ain't that what? Oh, no. They're not using cigarettes for smoking no more. You should only put them in your ears or in your ass, whichever gets the job done.
How dare we archive music for fear that people would play it? How dare we archive movies for fear that people would watch them? I mean, God forbid, right? Okay, so...
I mean, are they supposed to be the smart people?
This explains why people like Jim Ryan hate retro games. They think these older games would cannibalize sales from newer releases, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. We've had over a decade to prove that AA games are... AAA games, guys, are not viable in a business sense. The budgets and returns are not sustainable. However, to get these massive budgets off the ground, the industry effectively eliminated mid-tier games. No, they fucking didn't. There's still mid-tier games out there. These mid-tier games are what kept the medium alive and allowed it to flourish as somebody who doesn't play video games, simply because there was a greater amount of functional variety to cater to people's disparate tastes. Retro games are also part of this cultural ecosystem, and they are now off-limits and gatekept by clearly inept and greedy publishers. I believe him there. Today is a sad day for gaming. But in some sense, the openly brazen attitude of publishers is definitely something the gaming community won't forget in a hurry. No, we won't forget this. This is what you guys say? Absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Yep.
We don't want classic games archived because y'all play them.
Well, that's stupid. I mean, they ain't selling them. They ain't Sony, providing them.
Okay,
and
so...
Now, if they sold them like we get them now, like 100 games for, you know, dirt cheap, but yeah, they wouldn't put the good ones. They'd put the shitty ones, kind of like that little Game Boy type thing we had at the store. I got one. I think the only one it has is a Japanese version of the original Ninja Turtles Nintendo game on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that.
All
yeah.
the others are like the shittiest games yeah, you ever they, tried to yeah, play. They are.
Okay, so, Sony still does not understand why people want to play classic PlayStation games. Now, this is more than 7 years old.
Except it had Excitebike. I'll do like Excitebike.
In a new interview, Sony executive Jim Ryan thinks that... This is 2017 now. Yeah. Sony executive Jim Ryan thinks that most people wouldn't use backwards compatibility on the PS4 even if it were offered. Moreover, he doesn't understand why they would want to play classic PlayStation games in the first place. Courtesy of Time, who interviewed both Sean Layden and Jim Ryan of Sony, it seems that management there still doesn't get what the fuss is about when it comes to backwards compatibility on the PS4.
That's remember, this is the PS4. Their own games in the first place, probably.
And the appeal of classic games. Specifically, he had this to say. When we dabbled with backwards compatibility, I can say it is one of those features that is much requested but not actually used much. That, and I was at a Gran Turismo event where they recently had PS1, PS2, PS3, and PS4 games, and the PS1 and PS2 games, they looked ancient. Like, why would anybody play this? Can somebody slap this man in a face? I don't encourage punching, but if you could just, you know, full-on pimp slap.
And he answered his own question. It's
they're so old
so many people
looking.
Asking for it, but why would they want it? Like, shut the fuck up and give the people what they want.
Jim Ryan is Sony's head of global sales and marketing, so it's somewhat mystifying to me that he's making this argument at all. Remember, this was an argument in 2017, guys. This is while Trump was still in office the first time.
It's like Walt Disney saying, why would they like Mickey?
Why would they like classic movies?
Woke horse
yeah.
shit we got out there.
Yeah. The whole point of backwards compatibility is purely an exercise in marketing and PR. In that, having the ability to play classic games, even if you never actually would, adds another reason for prospective buyers with old PlayStation game collections to pick up something like the PS4 or the PS5. Well, I never accepted the reasoning that hardware support... By the way, we've got PS5s coming out of our fucking ears right now. So, I don't know how anybody can say they're not getting a PS5 this year, because we got so... There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. I mean, they've mass-produced more than I've ever seen in my life. Oh,
yeah. Well, it was so hard to get a hold of when they first came out. Because they were... It was during a trade war and
all this other stuff. Well, I never accepted the reasoning that hardware support from the PS3 to play PS2 and PS1 games was too expensive in terms of manufacturing. These days, the PS4 could easily offer a software solution to play old PS1 and PS2 discs. Obviously, there would be an initial expenditure to make the emulator, but once it was available, then the cost of Sony would be zero from that point on. However, the second point about classic games looking ancient belies probably the truth behind all this. Sony is currently more interested in graphics over gameplay, and I think that's deeply misguided.
Yeah, they need a way to combine the two. Now, like the remastered versions, I like the remastered
nice.
Of the old games.
Considering the unsustainable point big-budget games have reached in terms of leveraging high-end graphics, this kind of focus is just plain dangerous at present. Not to mention that games such as Minecraft that are incredibly popular as well as hugely successful despite their simple graphics. In addition, PS2 games such as The Warriors are also being sold on the PS4's online store. So why is Sony bothering with these kinds of ancient games apparently nobody wants? For someone that's meant to represent the Sony branding, the messaging is definitely off here and more than a bit confused. Admittedly, Sony is riding high at present and the PS4 is selling very well across the world. So you could argue, why does Sony even need to bother? That said, this is kind of dated appraisal on classic games, as well as the fact that people still have unused PS1 and PS2 game collections to hand, is definitely a missed opportunity when it comes to improving the marketing and PR for the console.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was an old freaking article, but it shows that this jackass over here, doesn't get why people want to play
it's
classic games.
Like he's never learned anything about selling, distributing, and marketing.
Like, I know.
People ask for it.
Because they're hiring the wrong fucking people to market
games.
They're
under the assumption, like some people, like the customer doesn't know what they want. Now, maybe for new stuff, but it always has an older concept behind values and things that you would see in a normal video game. But, no, that's terrible. He's stupid.
So, Elon Musk has a solution. He says that too many game studios are owned by giant corporations, so his giant corporation is going to start a studio to make games great again. Now, I'm not going to talk too much about this. Well, we're going to read this article.
I'd buy his games.
Well, he's launching an AI game studio. It's going to be created by AI, which sounds like it could be cool, though.
Maybe.
So, here's
the
thing.
It makes you so addicted you abandon everything you know.
Ah! So, here's the thing. The asshole that wrote this... Now, I'm going to say this... I've already said it as unprofessionally as I can say it. But saying it professionally... This is not journalism. Okay, so this is PC Gamer, the global authority on PC games, right? And I was thinking about actually writing to their parent company.
Yeah.
Because they have a complaint thing. It said, if you think that our journalism is off, I will definitely go in there and say that. I said, first of all, I respect a person to have their own opinion. But what he has done is he has turned this article, which is literally about Elon Musk creating... Or basically saying he's going to start an AI game studio, and to his anti-Elon, anti-Trump, anti-X page.
Well, you need this.
And that is not journalism.
Yeah, you need
that. So basically, this is the way I'm going to describe that. The news is, we have a chance of rain today.
Yeah.
Okay? But when you're not doing news, and when you're doing opinion... It is. We have a chance of rain today because you voted for somebody that's going to make the skies open up in blood, and you deserve what you get. Right? That's not journalism. That's opinion. All you have to tell people is that we got a chance of rain.
You got to understand too. Global warming research is horseshit.
No,
half of it doesn't even go to
that
the
was
purpose
just an,
it's meant for.
That was just an example.
There's so many more.
Okay, so we're basically going to say this in a. I'm going to use one of my voices.
Do one of your voices.
Ex-owner Elon Musk has taken a brief break from posting racism, transphobia, and conspiracy theory nonsense say that gaming has become too woke because the industry is dominated by massive corporations.
Different voice. So
he is going to use his massive corporation to start a new game studio powered by AI to make games great again. Musk's latest outburst comes in response to Dogecoin creator Billy Marcus, who said he doesn't understand how game developers and journalists have become so ideologically captured, particularly given that gamers, real gamers, one must assume, have always rejected dumb, manipulative BS and can tell when someone is an outsider poser. Too many game studios that are owned by massive corporations, said Musk, the owner of SpaceX, X, and Tesla, whose personal net worth is somewhere of north of $322 billion. XAI is going to start an AI game studio to make games great again. Lest there be any doubt about his motivations, Musk wrote in another post, can't they just make good games and skip the woke lecture? Like, we agree with that. This is all deeply, despairingly stupid, starting with the very premise that a giant corporation is going to save video games from, giant corporations. XAI is a startup, but currently has at least 100,000 NVIDIA GPUs at its disposal, meaning it's already a multi-billion dollar operation. Musk's concept of an AI game studio goes entirely unexplored, but is presumably some sort of holodeck-inspired nonsense that much in the promise of near-future off-world colonization lives entirely in the realm of fantasy. Despite the obvious ridiculousness of the whole thing, Musk's tweet is gaining traction from the predictable corners of the platform, who are thrilled with the prospect of game ownership being returned to the people, which is to say, the wealthiest man in the world. At least one actual game designer doesn't appear to be buying it, though. Say what you will about Battlecruiser 3000 AD, but he's not wrong. The likelihood of this going anywhere beyond a stupid idea expressed in a stupid tweet is very slim, but I do harbor some hope that Musk will talk himself into it, much like he talked himself into having to buy Twitter. If that happens, I would also expect similar results. Amazon and Google, both virtual bottomless money buckets themselves, discovered the hard way that making and releasing video games is actually really difficult. I've reached out to X for comment on Musk's latest idea and update if I receive a reply. Why don't you go fuck yourself, buddy?
Not if you have that voice. Good Lord, man.
Never and nobody fucking care. Comment reactions for this thread are now closed.
You know why? Because he got trolled so much.
It says zero comments and log in. Yep. Because he's a fucking idiot.
That sounded like Kamala's number one cuck. It just... ugh.
Well, he talks about how much he likes lots of Henry Cavill. So he's probably gay.
Yeah, that sounded like a gay voice.
Well, that's what I was going for.
Yeah.
That's
hard on the ears, buddy.
I know.
Maybe just because I see the person in my head, I want to punch him in the face.
That's the point, man. That's the fucking point.
Well, you should.
I'm glad because it means that me doing the voices actually fucking grates on people, and that's the goddamn point. Okay, so rock, paper, shotgun. By the way, that was killing my fucking vocal cords.
I wish that guy'd play rock, paper, shotgun.
In Minecraft, folks! That lawsuit, Jesus. You can't really... You're not really supposed to, like,
that was on my wish list. It wasn't my actual...
Well, they're going to be like, this guy went on Grimm's show and said, I don't... Look.
He wished it, and then it happened. It's like his wish came true. I found that fucking star.
That lawsuit against Steam's 30% cut of game sales is now a class action, meaning many other developers could benefit. An ongoing lawsuit against Valve about Steam's anti-competitive practices and especially its infamous 30% per game revenue cut has taken an interesting twist. According to a report, it's now a class action suit that could benefit any devs or publishers who have sold a game over the Steam store on or after January the 28th of 2017. Oh yeah. So it's kind of long, but basically here's what happened. Broad background. In April 2021, the Overgrowth devs, Wolfire Games, filed an antitrust lawsuit against Valve in the US, arguing that Steam uses its dominance of PC game sales to distort the market and bury the competition, and in particular that the company's base 30% cut of revenue from each game sold on Steam keeps overall game prices artificially high, with Valve allegedly pressuring devs not to sell their games for lower prices on stores with smaller commissioning fees. I believe that Valve is taking away gamers' freedom to choose how much extra they are willing to pay to use their platform. The founder, David Rolfson, said at the time, as preserved by the Game Discover Co. newsletter, I believe they are taking away competing stores' freedom to compete by taking advantage of their lower commission rates. I believe they are taking away developers' freedom to use different pricing models. As you would expect, Valve pushed back on all this. In July 2021, the company accused Wolfire of failing to supply evidence for their allegations while describing the 30% basic revenue cut as an industry standard, a claim that, while not unfair, flies in both the face of both growing developer discontent and competitors such as Epic Games and the Microsoft Store lowering their commission fees in recent years. Wolfire's lawsuit was eventually dismissed at Valve's request in 2021, November of course, with a judge in the case arguing that Wolfire had not demonstrated that they or anybody else had been harmed in Valve's management of Steam. The judge had also observed that the fact that the competing stores like EGS have taken a smaller cut and failed, nonetheless he usurped Steam as evidence that developers and publishers largely consider Steam's offering worth the price. The judge further rejected Wolfire's somewhat bizarre assertion that Valve has legally tethered the Steam store, which sells the games to the Steam platform, which encompasses social networking features, achievement tracking, game library management, and so forth. The judge found that the Steam store and platform are, on the contrary, a single product with game sales funding the platform's various free features. Wolfire were given 30 days to amend their case, address the dismissal's criticisms, and supply additional evidence. This they did, adding sufficient context to the original claims that in May 2022, the court found that aspects of the antitrust lawsuit could move forward. In July 2022, a court order also confirmed that Wolfire's suit would be combined with another similar antitrust lawsuit against Valve brought by multimedia production and VR company Dark Cat Studios. Fast forward to today as Game Industry Biz, very important site, reports that the combined suit has been recategorized as a class action suit. A class action suit is broadly one brought on behalf of a group of absent people, going beyond those actually in court. In the event that the plaintiffs win, everybody in that group stands to benefit. There is an absolute world of finicky legal detail within that hazy definition, mind you, even if you confine your attention to the laws of a particular country. According to Game Industry's James Batchelor, the class action will apply to any devs, publishers, or individuals who paid a commission to Valve in connection with a game sale, referring to the 30% cut that the Steam firm takes from each purchase on or after January 28th of 2017. GI also report that the court have denied Valve's request to exclude the testimony of a particular expert called by Dark Cat and Wolfire, the economist Dr. Stephen Schwartz. Uh-oh. All of these legal wrangles from part of the larger existential industry wrangle about Valve and Steam's centrality of PC gaming. My extremely baby's first monopoly take is that whatever your feelings about specific aspects of Steam's service or Valve in general, no individual company should exert this much power over the fortunes and overall culture of an art form. I have read the complaints of adult devs in servers about this. There are adult devs that we have covered that are extremely upset that Valve is treating them this way. As such, I welcome efforts such as Wolfire's to challenge Valve and Steam, even if I may not agree with the detail of the suit in question. What happens if Wolfire and Dark Cat win? According to my PhD in Googling, grasp of class action law potentially means that Valve might have to compensate a large number of parties, adding up to far more if they'd had to compensate Wolfire and Dark Cat alone. In turn, this might lead to a larger policy change at Valve, which would have dramatic ramifications for PC game publishing as a whole. Wow. That is fucking crazy. But they're very happy. Game devs are extremely happy right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because one company should not own the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on right now. So, okay. What is the next one? Doctor reveals Americans' biggest sexual kinks, including dangerous fetish that hospitalizes thousands.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Let's read more.
Doctors have revealed America's biggest bedroom kinks, some of which land thousands in the hospital every year. Experts from telehealth company Hims asked more than 7,000 Americans about their sex lives and habits they prefer in the bedroom. As 3 in 4 said they wanted to explore different trends, respondents revealed which kinks they were most interested in trying. One of the most popular and risky was objectophilia, which involves being sexually attracted to intimate objects. Robots do count in that, guys. For many, this means inserting foreign objects into one's anus or vagina to achieve orgasm. Recent research shows that nearly 4,000 Americans are rushed to the emergency room every year for getting them stuck in the rectums. Remember we did a story on that?
Yeah.
Including sex toys like vibrators. Others have opted for jars, drugs, and even weaponry and live animals. Live animals. That gerbil.
Well, they weren't live when they got them out.
Depending on how big or sharp the object is, insertion gone wrong can lead to tears in the rectal wall, infections, and even bowel obstructions.
Who knows that cat was wild?
Foot fetishes, role play, and cuckolding, the act of watching one's partner have sex with someone else, also made the list of habits that Americans were most curious about. The findings come as the U.S. faces a sex recession, with recent studies suggesting that more than 1 in 3 young people haven't had a sexual partner in the last year.
Yeah.
Men more likely than women to have foreign object in rectum.
Ooh, nope, not me.
Not I.
And I ain't had a sexual partner in at least a year.
Wow. Researchers from the University of Rochester, New York, found that men were more likely than women to come to hospital with a foreign object lodged in their rectums. They suggested, however, that this might be down to reporting bias because women were less likely to put non-sexual objects in their rectums, reducing the chances of their case being recorded. In a hymn survey, 1 in 15 participants express an object or interest in objectophilia. The team wrote, oral sex, anal sex, and other types of sexual experience with foreign objects can be a great way to find new sexual pleasure. Well, it doesn't say foreign objects, but yeah. However, the researchers suggested using objects with a flared base, as this prevents them from getting lodged in the anus. When putting an object up one's ass can be safe, the practice has led to thousands of injuries every year in the U.S. An analysis from researchers at the University of Rochester in New York, for example, found that nearly 40,000 Americans were hospitalized between 2012 and 2021, the equivalent of almost 4,000 a year. Men accounted for nearly 8 in 10 cases, with the most common group being males in their 20s and 30s, early 30s, who make up a third of all ER visits.
West Hollywood or
bottles, jars, or bottle lids? Bottles, jars, or bottle lids were the most common non-sexual devices found stuck in people's rectums, they found, accounting for 10% of cases. They were followed by drugs, 5%, and a ball or a marble, 3%.
Drugs, I would probably see.
I could see people doing that, yeah.
I don't think
other objects spotted were described. Other objects spotted were described as writing implements, or 2.3%, which may include pens, markers, and crayons.
And I wrote my name in my asshole. Now everyone knows it belongs to me.
In one extreme case from 2022, an 88-year-old man in France shut down his local hospital when he came into the emergency room with a World War I era artillery shell in his anus.
Did you do your homework? Yes. Did you sign your ass? No. F.
He claimed he slipped and fell. Wow!
Oh, that's a hell of a fall right there. Didn't leave it up first.
An 88-year-old Frenchman shut down a hospital in Toulon in 2022 when he arrived at the...
Well, that's still shit-stained and everything. They didn't hide nothing back.
Emergency department.
Boy, it looked like an explosion hit both sides of that fucking phallic object.
What an 8-inch First World War era artillery.
That's what it looked like.
That man's got fucking history in his ass.
He had a death wish. He was going to go out with a bang. They kept him from sitting on a pin.
Additionally, the survey revealed that 31% of respondents had role play on their list of things to try with their partner. I would not be surprised if that didn't include, according to what I see from the viewers on my channel, sister, cousin, mother. Guys, just fucking own up to it. I see how many views I get when the mother is a feature of Lust Theory. I saw that.
It's a step.
I watched it. I saw, you know, look, I see that. And by the way, the
but
sisters
then you got to subcategorize that. How many are thinking of a mother? How
well,
many
we're getting that. I don't know. It's an older woman. It could be an older woman, but
yeah,
they might have a mommy fetish.
An older woman because it's an older woman.
That's true.
And they just put themselves in that place of, oh, older woman comes and approaches me. And
well, also, there's, you know, the sister. Teachers, people like the sister and the cousin, the teacher. Yeah. Teacher's very popular.
Older family friends.
The team said this included situations with power dynamics, such as pretending to be a teacher and a student.
Bosses.
I wonder if we know anything about that. Another 17% were interested in dominant and submissive relationships in which one person takes control during sex. BDSM can also fit into this category. The researchers said, I love being dominant. I don't know what that is, but dominant. Dominant. I'm enjoying that.
Dominant.
Meanwhile, another 17% chose sexual voyeurism, or wanting to watch others have sexual exchanges without their knowledge.
Not
at least 12% of participants said they wanted to explore digital work or using a platform like OnlyFans to sell or pay for content. And 1 in 10 showed an interest in cuckolding, which is when one partner watches the other one cheat on them with someone else. Also, foot fetishes, sugar relationships, and polyamory were also among the most popular kinks.
Doing research.
Now, the research is here, guys. Right here. America's favorite kinks. Roleplay, 31%. Dom sub, 17%. Sexual voyeurism, 17%. Sugar, 17%. Solo polyamory, 13%. Consensual exhibitionism, that's running around naked, 12%. Digital sex work,
not that sexual.
12%. Or having sex in a public place.
Oh, running around naked. I've ran around naked many a time.
Digital sex work. Cuckolding, 10%. Foot fetishism, 9%. Wow, you foot fans are not as popular as I thought you were. There's only 9% of people out of 7,000 that are into feet. Wow.
Well,
I'm surprised.
You see those every day, especially in the summertime.
Objectophilia, 6%. So the objectophilia is very small. The people that are actually being rushed to the hospital is barely any.
Well,
most people are doing role play.
But
most people are like, I'm Superman and you're Wonder Woman. Maybe. Maybe that's how it goes down. Batman and Catwoman. Penguin? The Penguin?
Justice! Where are they? The dildo's in her ass and the butt beads are in her vagina for some reason.
Okay, since I plan to cover this one with Empress as well, inside the adults-only sex cruises where dozens of couples spice up their relationships in secret red rooms.
Secret red rooms.
Oh yeah, I want to know what's in the red room.
Instead of red rum, it's red room.
Couples are turning to adults-only sex cruises to spice up their relationships. By the way, red room... red rooms are actually rooms where really awful, horrible shit happens on the dark web, apparently. So it's weird that they would actually call this red rooms in this, I hope that's not what's going on. God, let's hope not. The X-rated jaunts, run by Temptation Cruises, feature everything from educational workshops to racy stage shows. But it's the secret red room where the wildest antics really go down.
Really?
Cameras and photos are banned. And staff are sanctioned at the doors to protect the privacy of those inside. Rules to entry are strict, as only couples are allowed admission. Once past... Oh, that's kind of like in Fetish Locator, where there was that one room, and there was somebody at the had to guard it, and you were only allowed in there with a couple, and you could only be in there for a certain amount of time. Yeah, so that's a real thing. So, rules to entry are strict, and only couples are allowed admission. Once past the doors, couples have the option of jumping on one of the many circular beds which have plastic protectors underneath the sheets in the center of the room, or simply sitting on the sidelines with a drink and observing all the action. Intimacy coach and hypnotherapist, ooh, I bet that comes in handy, Kate Sheeler, who runs racy seminars on the cruises, lifted the lid on what really goes down on board with an interview with Daily Mail. The Temptation Cruises aren't explicitly swingers cruises, but I would say that it's probably 60 to 70% of the people who are in that lifestyle, she explained. The other 30% are not, but they want a fun, sexy, adult atmosphere. The age range of attendees generally ranges from mid-20s to mid-50s, with the majority being couples, although there's plenty of singles on board, too. I would say there's people that are there to swing for sure. Then there are couples who don't interact with other couples, Kate said. They don't play, they don't swing, but they may want to do something a little wild, like there are areas on board where you can be topless and go dancing, she continued.
What?
There's a lot of people who may just want to push some personal boundaries and feel a little bit of, you know, dangerous and exciting. And then there's also areas where you can be completely nude, but that is in the indoor pool area, and the rules are very strict. Kate also shared one of the jaw-dropping sexual experiences she hosts inside the ship's secret playroom, or the Red Room, as it's become known as, where she guides up to 60 couples to orgasm together. I do a hypnotic sex seminar. It's couples only, but they can bring a third, she said. Once inside, the couples and throubles find a mattress to sit on together before being blindfolded. Part of the experience is getting in touch with your senses, and it also means that not everybody's being watched by each other, Kate said.
Be a fun cruise to go on.
There's a lot of people who may just want to push some personal boundaries and feel a little bit, you know, dangerous and exciting, Kate said of the attendees. Ooh, in addition to sexy seminars, the cruises also host racy live entertainment shows. Ooh, that sounds cool. Kate then guides the couples to begin touching each other before they eventually end up having full sex. So in the end, you have a room full of people orgasming together, Kate said proudly. The professional sexpert said that her seminars sell out every time, and they're now so successful that she's had to add more to her schedule to meet the demand. The professional sexpert said that her seminar... Oh, we all talked about that. They're asking me to do 3 instead of 2 on the next cruise because they're so popular. When she's not guiding couples to orgasm, Kate keeps busy with her sex podcast, Dirty Little Secrets, and shares sex advice on her official Instagram page. She also works as an OnlyFans creator, where she...
That's the one Kamala Harris went on.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. She also works as an OnlyFans creator, where she shares a mixture of explicit and educational content.
Dirty Little Secret. Yep. Did not help her. She's not as popular as Joe Rogan.
No. So, this is unfortunate.
What does crews go for?
I don't know. So, this is unfortunate, but we have to talk about it. And we have to mention something very important. So, I'm going to full screen this.
Yes.
Okay, so, fears grow for missing 12-year-old schoolgirl who police believe is with a man in his 20s and has not been seen for 4 days. Now, wait till you see the girl.
Yeah.
Police are concerned for the welfare of a 12-year-old girl who is missing from home and believed to be with a man in his late 20s. Isabel Lindsay Nandra, known as Bella, was last seen 4 days ago after she left school at 3:30 in Bexley Health in November 26. Officers believe that she caught a bus to Woolwich and then traveled to King George VDLR station, arriving at 10 p.m. The Metropolitan Police confirmed that she has been missing before, but never for this period of time. She may be in the company of a man described as black in his mid-20s with a small beard. He may be called Marshall or another name beginning with M.
This is in Britain, right?
Yes. She may also have been in the company of another man described as South Asian who had a physical fight with the other man.
Wait
till you see the girl.
She looks older than 12.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That's probably it.
That's the problem. And you know who said it? It wasn't a man. Some of these women say, oh, you always... No, there was a woman in the comments section on social media that said, that's the problem right there. That girl.
That is a girl.
That girl does not look...
If she's 12, she's a girl.
Right. She's 12, she's a girl. That girl does not look 12. She looks like she could be past as 18. And that's a fucking problem.
That's the problem with social media.
That's a fucking problem. That's the problem with social media. Instagram is telling all these girls to look older. And that's how you get these goddamn fucking creepy, real creepy dudes that see girls like this and take advantage
of
them.
Because
she's fucking 12.
Creepy. If you didn't know she was 12.
If you didn't know, you'd be fucked.
Oh, yeah. You'd be in trouble.
You'd be fucked.
Because how often do you tell a grown woman, let me see your ID?
Right. Because she looks like a grown-ass woman. If you saw her at the club or something, you wouldn't know she was fucking 12.
That shit happens way more often than
right,
you think.
Right. I mean, it's a bad fucking situation. She's 5'3" in height. She's wearing a school uniform.
I've dated girls 5'3" in height.
Yeah. But when a woman is literally saying it, and other women are saying the same thing, and then one's like, oh, well, I have my girls wear dresses and things. That's the fucking problem.
They can't say.
You're having
God
these...
knows, because they're over there saying, no, that's older than 12.
And they're being taught to do this.
Yes.
They're being taught to make themselves. Now, a lot of guys are like, okay, so I hope some younger guys are watching this.
It doesn't make you a pedophile. It just...
No, listen.
Disguise themselves to be old.
Let me have the floor for a minute. Okay. So, some of you younger guys might be watching this on BitChute. That's fine. This is a safe for work video. So, anyway, if that's true, you probably are... Well, I mean, okay, I'm not even saying that. Some of you younger guys, I mean, 18 plus. 18 is still younger for us. 18, 20, that's younger for us. So, people that are allowed to watch our not safe for work content, which would be 18 plus. So, anyway, what I'm saying is, you guys are probably in the dating era. Maybe you're dating, maybe you're going to clubs, maybe you're hanging out with women that you don't really know. So if this girl, and we want to show this girl to you again, if you saw this girl, would you think, see her at the club, she's dancing, she's got a drink in her hand, And you're like, okay. Because, of course, they use fake IDs.
Yeah.
They use a fake ID. They get in there. She's got a drink in her hand. And you're like, okay, let's do the thing. And she's like, how old are you? Oh, I'm old enough. You know, and you don't think too much about it because you're not using the as Terrence Pop says, you're using the little head instead of the big one.
Yeah.
And you go in there and you're having sex with a girl. And then there's a police officer the day after and says, sir, do you know that you were having sex with a 12-year-old child? It's like, what do you mean?
Shit, what if you have sex with them and afterward, your DNA is
All over them. And not only that, and the police officer finds out, he said, oh, this woman said that you, this little girl said that you raped her. And it's like, what do you,
but not out of the realms of possibility.
Well, I'm just saying, imagine she says, oh, he raped me or whatever. And she, you know, she's just, maybe she's seen something. She's a child. This is a child. Yep. Think about that. So she's not thinking right. She's not thinking at a mature level at all. So you're getting with a girl like this. You're having sex. You don't know that this is a 12-year-old. You're under the assumption, oh, she's 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. And
sure, she likes Nickelodeon, but everyone likes Nickelodeon.
But anyway, like I said, you're doing the thing, and you're like, and then the police officer's like, hey, we got a knock on your door. This woman, this little girl called and said that you took advantage of her, raped her, and we've found that your DNA is all over her. You are fucked. Yeah. Like, you are so fucked. This can happen to you. Like, this is a real case. We want people to understand this is a real case. This is not fantasy land. This is a real case. Too. If this 12-year-old girl is doing this, then more 12 anyway. And 13 and 14-year-old girls are doing this. Girls 15, 16, it doesn't matter. They're doing this. So if you're an older, and I mean, if you're in your 30s, I mean, yeah, some guys like to pick up the 20s. But if you're a 20-year-old guy and you're looking, oh, well, she's cute. She looks, you know, she looks old enough. Well, buddy, she's not. She's got that makeup on. She's got that whole little deal. Got the little fake eyelashes and eyebrows. Making herself look not like a little girl, but like a fucking woman. And that's a problem. Because there's no way in hell any daughter that I had would ever walk out like that. It's like, lady, what the fuck are you... Like, girl, what the fuck are you doing? You don't even call a little lady, whatever. What the fuck are you doing? You can't... You're not going to walk out of my house looking like that. There's no way in hell. I'd say whore paint. I'd call it whore paint.
At her sister.
We raised you better than that, is what I would say.
And at the time, I think we were around 18 and she was 13. She looked like she could have been 26.
And that's a problem.
But that was years ago. That was before
all the social media. And they get all these.
She just naturally looked.
And they go to all these YouTube things, all these TikTok things that tell them how to put on makeup and all that.
But yeah, the makeup does.
And they learn how to do all this stuff. They learn how to be these look older. They're like, oh, I look like a mature woman. That's a fucking problem if you're 12 and your mother needs her head examined and your father needs his head examined.
You think all the shit you were doing at 12, it wasn't even remotely adult.
Not even remotely adult.
Nope. And of course, your
man, I was playing video games.
Yeah, your brain's not fully developed. They say 25 is when your brain starts
Cerebral cortex develops. Yeah, that's fucking ridiculous, guys. This is awful, absolutely awful.
Ooh.
Oh well, all right. So we got a classic to end it off. Half of misogynistic tweets are sent by women, study finds. This is 2016, so it's more than 8 years old. Demo reveals that women and girls, as well as men, responsible for using misogynistic words in an abusive manner online. Half the aggressive tweets using the words slut and whore analyzed by social think tank demos came from women and girls, research indicates. The suggestion that women and girls, as well as men, are responsible for the use of misogynistic words in an abusive manner on Twitter came in research over a 3-week period from the end of April. Demo is what's carried out the study for the launch of Reclaim the Internet campaign. Said it was a cursory look at the problem of online abuse and misogyny and will pursue more research on the issue. Ew. Demos used an algorithm to look at 1.46 million posts on the social media platform over a three-week period, which used the word slut and whore. The words were chosen as a result of a 2014 demo study that found they were by far the most commonly used phrases in abusive misogynistic posts.
Sounds more like than folks speak to me.
Yes, this is the UK. More than half the 1.46 million posts analyzed were adverts for pornographic content. The remaining 650,000 sent by 450,000 people were broken down in categories. 33%, about 213,000 tweets, were deemed to have been sent aggressively. 9% were used for self-reference, and 58% were categorized as other, which included individuals using social media to discuss how to counter behavior like slut-shaming. Looking at this data of thousands, set of thousands of pieces of misogynistic abuse, and looking at the people the perpetrators of this abuse were following, gave us a good indication of who they were. He said, "The algorithm suggested that 50% were women, and a cursory look at who they were following, Beyonce, One Direction, and Justin Bieber, 2016 guys, indicated they were ordinary women and girls, not a cabal of angry white men following right-wing activists." There's two angry issues. There's a cabal of angry white men who might follow right-wing groups who are carrying out their 2016 kind of misogynistic abuse, and there is a cultural and societal issue of women and girls using this language. Study was extremely limited in scope, and we'd like to do more research. So,
I think men and women are more alike than what they think.
The result found cases in which girls of 15 were calling each other skinny slut and fat slag and engaging in body shaming.
I like fat slag. I'm going to start using that when I'm checking people into the casino. Well, you have a great night, you fat slag.
Yeah! All right. So, I think that's all we're going to do on this one, guys. We've done pretty much all the articles that we have. So, I guess we'll see you guys next time on the Grim Articles Show when we have more articles.
Later.
So, and don't forget, check out all the Subverse content that we got coming up, because it's going to come up like a fucking wildfire. It's just going to be like, wow, holy shit, that's the whole game. Yeah, I'm trying to speed through it as fast as I can. But all right, guys, this is the Grim Lord, and we will see you next time. Remember, check out spinningrobotpussy.com. Go get one of those, and I am out of here.
Later.
Enjoy the incline, folks. It's only getting better.